From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, the music and influence of T-Bone Burnett.
Frank, who was swank, robbed a bank with a tank for a prank. Sam, who was glam, ran a scam from Siam to Vietnam. Dean, who was clean, had a scene with the queen for a magazine. Joe wasn't slow, but didn't know how to blow all the dough from the show. Palestine, Texas. Palestine, Texas.
That was the T-Bone Burnett tune called Palestine, Texas. Joseph Henry T-Bone Burnett was born in St. Louis in 1948, but grew up in Fort Worth and has had a far-reaching influence on the Texas Third Coast music scene, but also on modern rock, country, Americana, and in film and TV soundtracks. Burnett is a musician, songwriter, producer, and an activist for musicians to be paid for their work in this digital age. He is the subject of a new book about his musical career called T-Bone Burnett, A Life in Pursuit, written by Lloyd Sachs.
I've been fascinated with him for a long time, back to when he was recognized by all the rock media and elsewhere as one of the best singer-songwriters in the country. It's surprising to me that at this point, a large percentage, a surprisingly large percentage of people don't know that he, you know, has that dimension to his work. Most people identify him as a producer, and, you know, it's impossible to read any reference to him in print without the word legendary or visionary or something like that in front of the word producer. And he certainly has been a great producer, but, you know, there's a large body of work that he leaves behind him as a different kind of artist. So that was one of the things that I wanted to communicate with the book. As I say in the book, sort of a mission to get people to recognize that he does have other dimensions to his talent besides that of a producer.
Accentuate the positive, destroy all the negatives. Before the black mass media get a hold of them.
Yeah, that does seem to be the great conundrum about T-Bone Burnett. So much of his success involving the rediscovery or the branding of Americana music. And his fingerprints are everywhere when it comes to so many projects, great projects, successful projects.
Yeah.
But then when it comes to his own music, he doesn't seem able to land the punch when it comes to connecting with the general audience. And it's not for a lack of talent or ability or being able to have, you know, fantastic quality material. There's something just not there.
Well, you know, there were just various factors that kind of played against him as a commercial artist when he was really attempting to be one. One of the early kind of things that put off some people was his kind of religious connection. He was very casually tagged a born-again artist, and, you know, he came out of Bob Dylan's Rolling Thunder tour and put together a band called the Alpha Band, which very much had religion on its mind and in a very kind of finger-pointing kind of way in some cases. David Mansfield, who was in that band, a great guitarist, refers to it as T-Bone's Jeremiah phase. You know, he was the great prophet telling everybody what they were doing wrong and warning them. But he also, just his personality, you know, he was just an insecure artist. He felt like he was just unable to keep up with people like, you know, his friend Warren Zevon and Jackson Browne and the whole singer-songwriter camp. His songs are very kind of quirky and, you know, in some cases self-righteous. You know, one of the things I point out in the book is that the harder he tried to be a commercial success, whether it was just going to lengths he didn't have to go in producing his music, just really being very self-conscious about it, the more he did that, the more he kind of hurt himself. Whereas when he went into the studio and just cut these albums with less money and less time and less self-consciousness, he scored his greatest successes. There's an album simply called T-Bone Burnett that some people really, really value as a great work. It's almost a kind of a hymnal type album. Very spare, acoustic, recorded in a few days in L.A. in a kind of country type setting. And, you know, you can just hear when he just sings, you know, from the gut, I guess, that he was just the most convincing and persuasive.
Baby, don't you say you want me. Baby, don't you say you need me. Baby, don't you say you love me for a day. Baby, don't you say you want me. Baby, don't you say you need me. Baby, don't you say you love me for always and in the sea. Every day you haunt me. First you hex me, then you taunt me, then you leave me in this twisted misery. I mean nothing to you, but for now I'm seeing through you. Someone else will save you, but it isn't me.
But it is his production work that has really set him apart, and he's worked with so many different artists of different genres, producing Grammy Awards for many. So how does he do that? I mean, he has this encyclopedic knowledge of American music, and I guess he knows mics and all that other kind of stuff. Does he just have a special kind of ear?
I think he probably does. And actually, one of my editors at one point asked me to look into the possibility that just in his DNA, I mean, physically, his hearing was on a different level than normal people. And I'm not sure that's the case. But he is just really, really strongly attuned to the artist and to the artist's needs and how to best bring out the artist. And he really, when he started out as a producer, he was known really for almost like a hands-off kind of approach where one of the quotes he said, he kind of listened the music into existence. And people felt really comfortable in his presence. Artists like Elvis Costello, the Wallflowers, he turned into a massive hit-making machine. That group, of course, led by Bob Dylan's son, Jacob, which had failed on its first album miserably and then became giant. You know, and he produced breakthrough albums by Los Lobos and by Gillian Welch and by, you know, just any number of artists. And if you go down the list of albums, you'll find a whole number of albums by artists who never did anything better than the stuff that they did with T-Bone, which always led me to wonder, well, why didn't they use him more often? And in some cases, it was because the commercial success wasn't what they wanted, which was the case of bands. I mean, the Bodines' debut album was one of the great debut albums of that era. And got, you know, acclaim all over the place, but they felt like it, or at least they said that it just kind of boxed them into this kind of alt country thing, and they wanted to basically play for arenas and get bigger success, and they retooled their music without him, and you can just hear on it that the music was just all over the place, and a lot of it just really didn't suit their sound. So he has great instincts. He is devoted to a kind of natural sound. He likes recording his albums live, and then in some cases going back and doing some redubbing or retweaking. But I remember, the artist Joe Henry, when he went into the studio with T-Bone for his album Shuffletown, which a lot of people may not know. I think it's kind of a cult item. But when Joe went in to record that album and T-Bone had him record the songs live, Henry was taken aback a little bit. He wasn't used to working like that so quickly and so off the cuff. And he learned a lesson, and such a powerful lesson, that he himself has become one of our leading producers of all kinds of talent in his own right, while continuing his career as a singer-songwriter.
So we hear about the legendary warm tones of T-Bone Burnett in his production, and in the Los Lobos, How Will the Wolf Survive? That was their breakout album. So how did he get Los Lobos, which was known as a phenomenal live act but couldn't deliver in the studio up until that point? What did he do?
Well, the first thing he recognizes is that, they were a great live band. And in fact, Steve Berlin, who became a member of Los Lobos and at least nominally co-produced those albums with T-Bone, Berlin wanted to capture that live wire sound on record. That was their identity. But T-Bone, among his other insights, he recognizes that, what might sound really good in a nightclub or a concert arena doesn't necessarily sound good, recorded in the studio. And so he just has a whole different kind of set of, methods to go by in the studio that will capture the band at its best in that environment. He has been... over the course of his career as a producer, he has refined a sound that very much plays towards the kind of the bottom tones of the music, where these kind of tones almost like blossom through the sound mix. I think his breakthrough on that was Raising Sand with Alison Krauss and Robert Plant. I mean, that just to me is just a masterpiece of, of mastering and engineering and whatnot.
Some sunny day, baby, when everything seems okay, babe, you wake up and find that you're alone, 'cause I'll be gone.
Now, Burnett is also known for his work in film, working with the Coen brothers, and the movie and the soundtrack that he produced, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, was credited for bringing back roots music in America.
Well, we love to make big statements like that, and maybe I'm not sure it brought it back, but that one album, basically against all odds, became huge. I mean, who would have expected that an album of songs basically of mountain music and bluegrass would, you know, storm the charts, especially at a time when, you know, this stuff wasn't getting a lot of radio airplay. It just, you know, as they say, just shot a bullseye at the zeitgeist or whatever's going on in America, and where people, you know, maybe responded to the just the homegrownness of that music. You know, the album was released, I think, right before 9/11, but obviously took on strong meaning afterwards. And you know, that music, if you want to trace the beginnings of the so-called Americana movement to a particular tipping point, that's it. Because in the wake of Oh Brother Where Art Thou, there were any number of bands, string bands, bluegrass artists who said, you know, let's stick to this. Let's really, this is who we are, and let's get a shot. And in fact, they got a lot more opportunities to make records and to perform in the wake of Oh Brother, and it became, you know, a genuine movement. You know, that hasn't even hit its peak yet.
As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the starry crown, good Lord, show me the way. Oh, sisters, let's go down, let's go down, come on down. Oh, sisters, let's go down, down in the river to pray. As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the robe and crown, good Lord, show me the way. Oh, brothers, let's go down, let's go down, come on down. Come on, brothers, let's go down, down in the river to pray.
Before there was Oh Brother Where Art Thou, there was The Big Lebowski.
Right.
And T-Bone was involved in that film basically in casting the type of music that The Big Lebowski would listen to and creating a sound for the film, which was also a musician's favorite kind of a movie.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a film, that was the first project he got from the Coen brothers, and he was basically pretty much given free rein to just roam around in his imagination and in his vast kind of musical knowledge and come up with music that might suit a film as off the wall as The Big Lebowski. And I mean, he just went to school, or you know, went to town on that. I mean, that soundtrack is all over the place, and may well have played, you know, a significant role in the film's popularity. I mean, the film was never a big commercial hit. People forget that. At the time, it was not a hit at all, but it became kind of a cult item thanks to the whole, you know, advent of the dude mentality that Jeff Bridges created. And now, you know, I mean, there are people who just pore over that film now and look for hidden meanings in the songs. There's a Captain Beefheart song in there that one writer out in California thought was really, really significant, and referring to this blue carpet in the film. But T-Bone, that was an opportunity for him to really explore the music he loved so much through the course of American history, musical history, and beyond. And so, you know, Oh Brother was just kind of the natural next step for him in terms of, you know, providing, you know, opening more windows to American music for more people.
He was able to work more closely with Jeff Bridges in the film Crazy Heart, in which he won an Academy Award for the Best Original Song for The Weary Kind.
Your heart's on the loose. You roll in sevens with nothing to lose. This ain't no place for the real kind. You called all your shots, shooting eight ball at the corner truck stop. Somehow it don't feel like home anymore. This ain't no place for the weary kind. This ain't no place to lose your mind. This ain't no place to fall behind.
The music in that film, you know, was, you know, original music. It just was one of the better examples of that kind of film.
But the songwriting for the film was there deliberately to try to express the character that the film is about.
Right, right.
So these are like songs that are stories that show the scars and the just the journey that of the Jeff Bridges character.
Yeah. I mean, and
so it's not just pulling music out of the Great American Songbook that we have. It was a creation part of, and so it was a different way of exhibiting the talents of T-Bone Burnett.
Oh yeah, for sure. And it was a film, you know, that a lot of people, including me, kind of link it to the Robert Duvall movie Tender Mercies, in which he played a kind of faded country singer falling on hard times. And in the case of this film, you know, Bridges had plenty of hard times that he was dealing with. And the songs somehow not only reflected those hard lives, but also, you know, the way that these people transcended those lives through the music, and how the music itself became just such an important aspect of life itself for them. That, you know, and it's just something that they would never give up.
So T-Bone Burnett, aside from being an American musician, singer, songwriter, soundtrack, record, movie, soundtrack producer, he's also a leader in the musician movement. He's calling him an audio activist.
Yeah, I mean, and he's been very outspoken. In fact, you know, recently his recent appearance at the Americana Fest, he was the keynote speaker, and you can actually, you know, find the text of his speech online.
A lot of people are sharing that.
Yeah. You know, he's not alone in believing that, you know, artists are really not getting treated right. In the era of streaming music and YouTube and whatnot. And he's been very outspoken about that. He's been very outspoken about the basic sham that MP3 technology is. I mean, he's a devout believer in analog music, both in terms of its quality and its ability to preserve the music that we make. He says they're devising a new kind of storage technology, but can't devise the specifics because of copyright questions.
So he doesn't like all this audio compression that's going on that sort of strips the warmth out of out of the audio and into, you know, these MP3s. They're really small, but
right.
You know, you can hear that it's not as clean.
Well, you know, it's like the anybody who's participated in the CD versus LP argument, and when I say LP, I mean vinyl, I don't think there are a lot of people who doubt that the sound of vinyl is warmer and richer than the sound of CDs, although CDs can sound pretty well. And T-Bone himself has made the best use of CD technology he's been able to. But it's just, it's a question of you know, how do we get to that place where the analog technology is, reaching more people and or, you know, people will care about the difference between MP3s and vinyl or analog music or whatever. I mean, I think, you know, serious music fans, care a lot about that. But at a time where people are just happy to wander around with their earbuds, I mean, you know, even if you have better earphones with your iPhone or iPod, it's going to sound better. But instead of those, you know, the buds themselves are like the worst kind of receiver of the music. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, there are a lot of people who think the vinyl movement is here to stay. I'm not so sure, partly because vinyl costs, a lot more than a CD, unless I'm completely out of tune at this point. The thing about T-Bone is that, you know, there is a little P.T. Barnum in him in terms of, I mean, he is on one level a businessman. And he succeeded as well as he has in the business because he has great instincts when it comes to making deals and promoting his product. But beyond that, I mean, he really genuinely, in everything he does, is trying to get to a better place and trying to create better music and better sounding music and really rising to a standard that basically very few producers in L.A. or Hollywood or Nashville or wherever, you know, are as caught up in as he is. I really believe that. We talk about religion. There are different kinds of religion. But, I mean, for him, I think there's the act of making music has a spiritual quality. I mean, apart from, you know, any particular religion you're thinking of, but there's, and he really is kind of carried by that whole feeling of wanting to get to the next best place in terms of making music, recording it, and presenting it.
The wind turns like a dagger. The rain falls like a hammer. The sky has grown dark, but it's not too late. The weather crashes down. What's lost cannot be found. The night is closing, but it's not too late.
Boyd Sachs is the author of the new book, T-Bone Burnett, A Life in Pursuit. It's published by the University of Texas Press. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You can also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. That's where you can listen to past Texas Matters programs, and you can find us on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.